Why don't we bring this meeting back to order and get restarted? Thank you for everyone for sticking with us through the break. I think, Mr. Timerson, are you going to be providing the staff response or the start of the staff response?
Yes.
Thank you.
Commissioner Austin, board members, my name is Brian Timerson. I'm a project manager with the Strategic Projects section working on this KETAC project. There were several questions and comments brought up about greenhouse gas backed and about the schedule of compliance and the certainty of its enforceability. So I'd like to first start with the greenhouse gas backed comments and provide some background that may help answer some of your questions. It's good to know, it's important to note that the agency has had numerous conversations with EPA on how to implement a greenhouse gas back since we're one of the first. We had weekly calls, we had many communications with EPA, and even after we received the EPA's comments on the proposed draft permit, we contacted them and tried to determine what would be the most important things that they would like to see in the permit or the permit change. One of the things they identified, or the main thing they identified, was the addition of the CO2 equivalent limit. That was one thing that they felt strongly about. That's why we added it to the original CO2 limit in the permit. So we felt by adding an additional limit, this would alleviate some of the concerns that EPA could have had about the project, and it responded to their comments. Next, one of the comments was that other furnace designs were not chosen. This project is actually a refurbishment of an existing grate kiln, not an installation of a new furnace. But with that said, this design has basically the similar thermal consumption that's well within the range of a typical traveling grate design. So it's not necessarily one design is fuel efficient, one design isn't. They're within the parameters of each other's design. But because this is a refurbishment of an existing line, that's why the energy efficiencies and energy efficient modifications were chosen to be installed on this type of a furnace. One of the other comments was, why isn't there a requirement to have a CO2 SEM? A straightforward calculation of CO2 from measurements of fuel, ore, and limestone will be used, which we feel is just as accurate, if not more accurate, than a CO2 SEM. One of the problems with the CO2 SEM is that it only measures CO2. There are CH4 and N2O that are greenhouse gas contributors that would not be measured by a CO2 SEM. So you would have to not only, add those into an equation, but they wouldn't be measured by a CO2 SEM. So a CO2 SEM doesn't necessarily give you your total greenhouse gases. That was basically all I had for the greenhouse gas part. Are there any questions, or can I move on to the mercury part?
Seeing none?
Okay.
Please, go ahead.
There were several questions regarding the TMDL and the certainty of these equivalent reductions. I believe there was a document handed out called Guidelines for New and Modified Mercury Air Emission Sources. Some of what was quoted was from an implementation strategy. That implementation strategy was used to develop this document, the Guidelines for the New and Modified Sources. This document was developed with the oversight group, and it's used to guide permitting as well as basically the implementation of the TMDL. If you look on...
We don't actually have that, so you may want to read this section. That's all right.
Okay, well, in any case, part of this is talking about, many times people or comments have been made stating that it's not a permit requirement, but right in this guide, the guideline for new and modified air emission sources, it states that basically it states that permits will be issued and permits will be used to implement the goals of the TMDL, but it also states that the MPCA may use other enforceable documents, such as compliance agreements, to get to the final and the goals of the TMDL. One of the other comments and one of the things that was discussed is that these equivalent reductions, there needs to be equivalent reductions from the increase for the proposed new line. And the equivalent reductions at the existing U.S. Steel lines required by the SOC to offset the increase from the key tax expansion are certain. Each step of the research, trials, reporting, and installation is detailed in the SOC, which is basically attached to the permit. The SOC also includes a backup plan for equivalent reductions to increase to the increases from the KeyTech expansion should any of the research that is required by the SOC not identify viable control technology. The backup equivalent reduction plan also required by the SOC is not uncertain. The backup plan or the contingency plan is required no later than January 1st of 2016, and if no mercury control technologies are put into a long-term trial, through the plan, the SOC requires that U.S. Steel to identify equivalent reductions for the cumulative mercury emissions from the KeyTech expansion from startup through January 1st of 2025. U.S. Steel must include an evaluation of wasting scrubber solids, which is a known means of controlling mercury emissions because it actually removes mercury from the process by which it's emitted into the atmosphere. While U.S. Steel's exact proposal is unknown at this time, the requirement to comply to completely offset the KeyTech emission increases is certain and enforceable. Just as a side note, U.S. Steel has submitted an application, a permit application, for installing the ACI dry controls at MinTech on line 6. So that's something that's ahead of schedule, that even before this SOC is implemented, they're proposing to install ACI on their line 6. And again, you heard Ann Jackson state that she's quite confident that this can achieve at least an 80% control. One of the comments and the concerns is the enforceability of this schedule of compliance. An SOC is an enforceable, legally binding document. It's agreement between the MPCA and U.S. Steel. If U.S. Steel fails to comply with any of the terms of the SOC, the MPCA reserves its right to file suit in district court to compel U.S. Steel to complete these requirements. So it is an enforceable document like any other enforcement document that we have. So the fact that we're using the air permit with the SOC, we believe, does give adequate confidence that the goals of the TMDL will be met.
Mr.
Problem with that enforceability is that, so it gives you the right to sue them or sue them because they failed to comply with the SOC.
Commissioner Hassan, Board Member Foley, it gives us the right to take to basically sue them if they do not complete any of the requirements of the SOC. So there's
Mr. Chairman, so having it in the SOC, what you're saying is equivalent to having it in the permit for the ability to make sure that they actually do what we want them and what they say they're going to do. Is that true?
Commissioner Foley, yes. It's an enforceable document like a permit, like an SOC, like another enforcement document that we have.
Mr. Chairman, why wouldn't you put it in the permit if you have it's in a different document? Why wouldn't you have it in the same document?
Commissioner, Board Member Foley, part of the problem is that these are untested, unproven technologies. We don't know exactly what type of a reduction it would get. If we say we estimate the reduction would be at a certain level, it's difficult to put in a permit around a certain level. We don't know. What we're trying to do with the permit and the SOC is ensure that they comply with the goals of the TMDL and they meet that complete offset of any new increases and the 75% reduction by the year 2025.
Ms. Winters, you have something to add, I gather.
I do. Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Kathleen Winters, an Assistant Attorney General here representing the Pollution Control Agency staff today. In your materials, you may have seen reference to the fact that the SOC imposes requirements on U.S. Steel that apply at both the Keetac facility and its other MNTAC facility. The requirements that are imposed for mercury reduction at both of those facilities are what's necessary to reach the TMDL goals of the 75% reduction, at least U.S. Steel's contribution to that 75% reduction from the taconite industry, and to achieve the equivalent reductions for the new mercury emissions from the renovated line. It is not possible as a legal matter for the MPCA to impose regulations on, or requirements I should say, on the MNTAC facility using the Keetac facility permit. The Keetac facility permit applies just to Keetac. So a companion piece, the SOC, was an appropriate tool to use for the overarching trajectory of downward mercury emissions from both of these facilities in Minnesota. It imposes upon U.S. Steel enforceable requirements, as you've just heard. Permits are a tool that can be enforced through something like an SOC or a stipulation agreement or a lawsuit. An SOC in itself can be enforced if there is a breach of that document through a lawsuit. The MPCA, by entering into those types of agreements, does not relinquish any of its authority to see to it that the requirements of the agreement themselves are, can be implemented through further action if necessary. But the companion SOC was there because the override, the overarching mercury reduction trajectory involves more than the Keetac facility.
Board Member Weilander. Ms. Winters.
That's a really interesting and kind of a sticky question. No, there are no, what both Mr. Ruther, I think, and Ms. McAbee were talking about were the citizen suit provisions of the Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act does provide that citizens, private citizens, may bring lawsuits to enforce conditions of the Clean Air Act. And that can be through something that's done in a permit that isn't, that where the permittee doesn't comply with it. That does not cover SOCs. That is true. Private citizens may not bring a direct lawsuit to enforce the conditions of an SOC. That authority is reserved to the parties to the agreement. And in this case, the regulatory authority is the MPCA's, and it would be the MPCA that would be enforcing. There's a even more complex and a legal question involved with the citizen provisions of the Clean Air Act. And there is no answer to this more complex question at this time, and that's because this mercury TMDL is so new. You heard in the early part of the presentation that the mercury TMDL is a water requirement. It's a clean water air, that program, the TMDL program, is a clean water program. And the mercury TMDL is unique in that a large contribution to the contamination in fish tissue doesn't come from the water, it comes from the air, from air deposition. So this TMDL tries to approach the problem of mercury contamination through both a limitation, 24 pounds per year, on the water discharges as its ultimate goal for water discharges, and then the 789 pounds per year of air deposition. Any permit requirements that are put into place to try to reach those goals are therefore requirements that are trying to implement a Clean Water Act TMDL. The citizen suit provisions of the Clean Air Act are available for applicable requirements under the Clean Air Act. It's a totally open question, as yet unresolved, but I'm sure someday someone will litigate this, as to whether or not a Clean Water Act TMDL becomes, or could ever become, a Clean Air Act applicable requirement such that citizens could bring a direct lawsuit to enforce it? It's a really difficult question, and there is no answer at this time. I'm sorry, I can't provide you with better clarity about that.
If this were put in place and you had a group of citizens that said, hey, you know, this thing isn't being enforced properly, what is their means of approaching this? Do they have to go directly to the company, to the PCA? Do we end up in litigation over this on their behalf? What happens?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Willander, I hesitate, particularly in this forum, to provide legal advice to citizen groups or to anybody else. I can tell you that there have been, there are a variety of tools that exist in state law to allow private groups to challenge the actions of state agencies. There are ones that are specific to the environment and that are specifically to challenge environmental provisions and environmental stewardship. So I think it is fair to say that private groups are not without any recourse. They have options.
Mr. Newman.
Would it be permissible to make reference to the SOC in the permit incorporated by reference? Is that not permitted because of the inclusion of that question?
Ms. Winters.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Newman, to try to incorporate it by reference would basically be the same thing as just picking up the requirements and putting them literally into the permit. And so because this permit is a KETAC permit, trying to do that when it actually governs many requirements at MNTAC, and many, it also governs some requirements that are unrelated to air entirely. So that was the point of having a side agreement. It's a pretty broad agreement that covers a variety of topics. Broader than just the, and I shouldn't say just, as though this Clean Air Act permit is a simple little permit. It's not. It's a complex permit, but it is limited in its subject matter.
Mr. Newman.
Well, the action before us today is a permit.
Yes, it is.
What assurance do we have that the SOC is also entered into?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Newman, it's already been finalized. It was finalized on June 9th of 2011. So the parties have already signed and it's final.
Mr. Weilander.
Does the SOC pass EPA's muster as far as the rights of the public to address problems?
Ms. Winters.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Willander, again, that kind of crosses between, goes back and forth across the question of what recourse is available to private citizens under the Clean Air Act and the citizen suits of the Clean Air Act versus the TMDL implementation measures, which are under the Clean Water Act. So EPA really doesn't have a role in saying whether or not this SOC is good for the citizens. Mr. Chair, Mr. Willander, let me correct one thing I said. That EPA, it's not a matter of whether or not they think this SOC is good for the citizens. What I meant was, is a good legal tool for recourse for citizens. And I am going to let Brian talk about what EPA was, what materials were in front of EPA at the time that it had its review.
Mr. Tavers.
Chairman Austin, Commissioner Weilander, when we, you know, the EPA had the entire draft permit application, which included at the time the SOC, which had the air provisions in it. So they had all that information, and their comments were specifically on the greenhouse gas sections, and that's what we discussed with them more than anything. They had the information, but they did not bring it up.
Any other questions for staff? So what's the pleasure of the board? The question in front of us is whether we are going to take the suggested staff resolution to deny a request for a contested case hearing and then to authorize the issuance of the air permit for this facility, as laid up on page 8 of your document.
Commissioner, do you want to take one motion or two?
We can do it. Two. I've been told two is better.
I would make a motion to deny the request for a contested case hearing.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Wylander. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Oh,
I'm sorry.
Well, let's amend that resolution, and specifically, I suspect what the members were looking at is to adopt staff suggested resolution on page 8.
That's.
So you also are adopting the findings of fact to support the amendment. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
That is correct.
And the seconder also?
Yes.
That is correct. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say same sign. Hearing none, the motion passes. And the second suggested staff resolution is also on page 8, which would be the authorization to issue the air emission facility permit. Do we have a motion? First,
second.
Discussion.
Please specify the motion with particularity. Would that be the motion on page 8?
Yes.
And would there be an amendment to correct the permit number so it's actually 137-0006-004 as opposed to the paper?
Are we ready to vote? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you, staff, for your work on this. Thank you for everybody who's come in and been part of this conversation. Given the time, I will make my commissioner's report very brief. Since we've been back from the shutdown, we have continued to work on our organizational structure. And some of the adjustments that we've made have been part of budget reductions. Some of them have been part of some other needs to refill management positions and division director positions after retirements. And so the main item I wanted to update you on is that our prevention and assistance division, which traditionally has been all about essentially non-regulatory technical assistance, has now had the solid waste division added to it, which does have some regulatory oversight, and also is taking on the environmental review functions within the agency and also supporting the EQB functions that are now physically in our building. And we will continue to do that until such a time as the fate of the EQB is decided. One of the reasons we wanted to move this direction was we think there are some real opportunities to put pollution prevention conversations at the front end of regulatory activity. So by adding some regulatory activity into that group, they will get used to operating in that mode. And then by adding the environmental review function into that pollution prevention mindset, we've got a real chance to think differently about how we do this. One of the visions, and we don't know if this will come to pass, but one of the visions would be if there's a permit application from someone, once we know the scope of what they're talking about, without getting into specifics about whether it's a particular type of indurating furnace or not, we have a little bit of a timeout in that conversation where there's a bigger conversation about what kind of broader pollution prevention activity could be undertaken while you're designing this project, so at the end, you have fewer issues to deal with. So we're real optimistic about that and think there's some real fertile ground. The conversation about alternatives came up here today. The conversation about alternatives came up last time we met regarding the paint booth for the Met Council. This notion of early conversations about alternatives is really where we need to spend some time and energy. So I just wanted to let you know that we are going that direction. We are getting an extraordinary number of requests for people to have conversations with us in a non-regulatory manner. This is across all sectors. I think there's two reasons for that. One is people like to talk to the authorities, and the agency in many of these arenas is the authority, and both technically and regulatorily. The other is that I think, given where we are economically, people don't have extra time and money to spend on thinking about some of the things we think about every day. So I think that's why folks are starting to reach out to us. And it's an interesting array. It's soil and water conservation districts, ag, it's the industrial sector, it's even spanning out into, you know, our sister agencies. So we'll keep you up to date on that as well. One last just note, we are, theoretically, we have a meeting on September 27th. I would suggest that we don't meet that day since we met today. There's not an item that's carrying over from here. And so our next meeting would be October 25th. And I just appreciate all of you accommodating this change in schedule. This was something that we did at least partially to cover some ground that we lost during the shutdown. So we appreciate you changing your schedule to help us catch up with some of ours. If no one has any questions, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved by Ms. Riley and seconded by Mr. Newman. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, and we'll see you in 6 weeks.